Blog Talk Radio.
The closer that you are, the more you know. You're caught in the moment, and your heart can't tell how far you'll go and how much you want it, and without a care. Something that you're not looking for is there, searching on horizons that are painted in your mind. What will you find? A movie that will always catch your kind. Looking at the past, that's how you'll know. You've got to believe that it will never last. Like TV shows that end in a season, but the story goes on. Even when the leading lady is gone, searching on horizons that are painted in your mind. What will you find? A movie that will always cast your kind. You can be a star in your daydream window, watching other people passing by. You can see the stars through your daydream window, where the constellations always seem to align up in the sky. Looking at the past, that's how you'll know. You've got to believe that it will never last. Like TV shows.
That tune is an original one by tonight's guest. It's called Daydream Window. Tonight's show is a dedication to all the lives lost on this day 24 years ago during the Loma Prieta earthquake. I remember vividly standing outside, having gotten off work. Next thing I knew, the ground started rolling beneath my feet, and once the rolling stopped, bridges and overpasses had collapsed. Life is but a dream, and is filled with unexpected tragedy, as well as joyful moments. Do treasure those joyful moments, because tomorrow is never promised. Never. Listeners, I am your host, GD. Welcome to A Touch of Grace. Now on with the interview that I have postponed one time too many. But being the lady that she is, she has been extremely patient with old GD. She is composer, musician, arranger, producer, and sound artist. One insightful music appreciator wrote, she takes her inspiration from 60s film score and classic pop to create an indelible, sprawling landscape of sound. And she has returned to share a little bit more of her incredible musical story with myself and all of you. Without another moment of wait, I'd like to welcome once again the lovely and talented Mary Edwards. Mary, my talented sister, how are you this evening?
Didi, it's so good to be back, and I am incredibly humbled by that introduction. Thank you so much. And I also have to note that I have the chills right now from your description of 24 years ago. That was quite a time, and I have to tell you, there's a lot of parallels running through this night, because 24 years ago, I was contemplating, probably a few days before, taking what would have been my second trip to San Francisco in the Bay Area. I made my maiden voyage 24 years ago in the summer, and it changed my life forever. I always imagined what it would be like to visit the Bay Area, particularly San Francisco. As you know, that land where you live, highly influential on my sound, on my music. And I was so taken with my first trip that I thought about taking a second one later that fall, and it would have been around this time during the series. And when that earthquake struck, I realized that it wasn't my time.
Okay. So you took a profound step back and realized
that
it was like maybe, maybe a message of some sort.
I took it as a message. I also wondered what it would have been like had I ended up back there in probably one of its most naturally troubled times. But on a, you know, on an uplifting note, I had the great fortune of revisiting the city many, many, many times after it had been rebuilt.
Yeah, it they just opened the New Bay Bridge some 20 years later after that. So it really is a beautiful city. It's getting pretty crowded in the Bay Area. But you know what? You've been a very busy diva since last we spoke. Now, I read where your work has been featured during the 2013-14 season at Grimshaw, and I practiced this all night, and I'll probably say it wrong, Gudwick's Art Gallery. And as a matter of fact, today is the final day. Yeah.
Yes, today was the last day. It was a wonderful 6-week exhibition in which I created a soundscape, site-specific soundscape for the Grimshaw Goodwitz Gallery up in Massachusetts under the curatorship of Kathleen Hancock. And it was a good 6-week run. I had a chance to exhibit with a woman named Charlotte Hamlin, who's a textile artist. My piece was specifically about a river that's up in that area called the Quikichan, which was centerpiece to the 19th century Industrial Revolution and is now partially obscured. And unless you're from that area, you don't really know about it. So when I was invited to do a soundscape for that gallery, instead of bringing something up that I was familiar with, I took it as a challenge to research something that I had no prior knowledge of, and that's how this project came about. And it was really fulfilling because I got some great exposure with that, and as you know, sound design and sound installation is the other world in which I live. So singer-songwriter aside, being a singer-songwriter aside, that's my other love. So it was a good time this year. It was a really good chance for me to exercise that.
Right. It sounds fascinating, and I wish I lived on the East Coast or had the opportunity to take a trip there while it was where it was. And but I'm just so proud of you, and you've just done so many wonderful things with your creative gift that the master gave. And you also exhibited related works for the time being, and I Could Live Forever in a Day Like Today at Geller 114 in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
What was that like?
Well, that was a great experience as well, and I will have the opportunity to complete the trilogy. What I did was I created three specific pieces that were interrelated, pieces that are about moving through space. The difference between, say, writing a straightaway song with lyrics and a melody versus writing a sound installation or a soundscape is to really look at textures, to really look at music in a more textural, architectural way. And so that gave me an opportunity to think about, and I've been thinking about this for a long time, this is sort of a long time coming, to look at three distinct spaces that are experiences that we all might have shared at one time or another, and sort of musically translate those and rhythmically translate those. And so to show them up at the Gallery 114 out in Portland, Oregon, was a great opportunity to get exposure in a place where sound art is really embraced. Out on the West Coast, as you know, it's extremely progressive, and it's taking off. It's really taking off, and no pun intended, speaking of taking off. I'm also doing a piece about an airport, so that's my next big project coming out.
Yeah, I read that too. I read something about an airport, and I was trying to understand it. And of course, you know, when I printed this, I didn't get a chance to make it any bigger, and I wondered about that. So what is that all about, the whole airport thing?
Well, it's still related to the theme of, sort of moving through space, still related to the theme of what it feels like to sort of be in that transitional period as we all experience. And airports are like, they're very much like a womb, like a free-range womb. Everything we need is provided within that space, and at the same time, there's almost no beginning and no end. It's like, whether you're coming or going, it's not so much about the arrival or the departure, but the experience one has, that feeling of suspension, that feeling of uncertainty. And to sort of capture that musically, again, I'm thinking about architecture. I'm thinking about what it's like to exist in that space. So a lot of how I write, a lot of how I create the sound and music, is very ambient, very suspenseful. Mm-hmm. You think about dramatic scores, incidental music that you hear in dramatic films. That's also my inspiration for these pieces. So there will be these motifs that show up throughout the piece. So one minute you're listening to sort of like an ambient, suspenseful sound, and somewhere embedded throughout the piece, you'll hear these little sort of musical interludes that sort of hint at suspense and hint at the unknown, sometimes evoking fear or uncertainty, and sometimes there's resolution there too.
You know, as a writer, that is fascinating how you just described the musical experience, because I'm a firm believer, a very firm believer, that music invokes and has the power to invoke all kinds of emotions. And there's a song by Tower of Power, whenever I hear it, it's called So Very Hard to Go, I tear up, and I'm like, okay, well, where did that come from? So there is very much a metamorphosis that happens for the creator doing that, and I'm wondering, is there a special ambiance you set prior to sitting down to compose this? You talked about the emotional piece, but are the settings that you surround yourself with tranquil, or does it even matter?
Well, it's funny because when you think about the idea of a composer sitting down, one might imagine, lighting up candles, burning some incense,
turning
the lights. And it's funny because I don't want to dispel any wonderful myths about the songwriting process or the composing process, but I sit at my piano more often than not when it comes to actually getting to the meat of the work. And I come up with a melody. I work night, mostly during the day. I think about one of my musical heroes who we lost in the last year, Hal David. He was one half of songwriting team Bacharach. And David, as you know, Burt Bacharach, who they wrote for Dionne Warwick. They wrote many, many songs for Dionne Warwick.
Oh, yeah.
And Hal kept a very stringent 9-to-5 schedule. And I always admired that about him, that he said, all right, at some point, I've got to cut it off so that I can sort of get on with my day, have my normal life, eat my meals, kiss my wife, have a good rest, have a good bath, and still get some inspiration. And so what I do is I get a lot of the inspiration, I call it, I bring it back to my studio. So my studio itself is a very warm and welcoming place, but it's not terribly fancy. It's not where I actually end up doing the bulk of my music. It's quite utilitarian, but it's got a little bit of a homey feel to it. It's not all steel and computers. It's got a nice sort of old wooden desk that was salvaged from a piece of furniture from my childhood that I refurbished, so that I am connected to a very tender place in my life. I keep a few things around me that connect me to nature. So in terms of the ambiance there, yes, it's very simple. It's a little utilitarian, and at the same time, it's real basic so that I can focus right on getting down to the work. And creating the ambiance comes from within for me. So I like to sort of, you know, speaking of daydream, I do tend to create a lot of scenarios in my mind. How I often write songs is a line will come to me either through a conversation that I have with somebody, a piece of literature that I've read, a film I've seen, or a description of something that I encounter. And I'll take that one line and I'll build an entire song around it. In the case of creating, an instrumental, I think there might be some synesthesia going on, which is that ability to see colors with music, and I do get a little bit of that. So sometimes I'm affected by the time of day or certain colors. I go out to nature quite a bit, and you know, spend time hiking in the woods or even just walking down a city street, and something will strike me you know, through the shape or the color. And or of course I'm often referencing, you know, a really great song that I, you know, I grew up on. And it can be from any genre. The last time you and I spoke, we spoke a lot about late great Tina Marie.
Right.
How she wrote, she's incredibly visual in her writing. As is someone like Stevie Wonder, who you would think, well, for someone who is visually impaired, has this incredible descriptive quality about his, you know, about what he sees in his mind.
Very distinct. Yeah. You know, my favorite song by you has to be Love, 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 and it's because of what it invokes in me. It's just very dreamy. And when I think about the recording studio, I step outside of the recording studio and try to imagine what it would be like in front of an audience. And I know that Sade had, and I always reference her because she was the last concert I saw, but whenever she bring a thing or they start saying, is it a crime, it like brings the house down. So is there that signature Mary Edwards song that audience want to hear before you gracefully walk off the stage?
I often do White Jumpsuit as my closing song because it has the most energy. I've often closed shows with Love, Love, Love. White Jumpsuit. And the song that was, I think it was the sixth song on the console album, which is Come Round, which I, you know, I'm not a political writer by any means, but around the time of President Obama's first election period, prior to that, when I was really just getting an understanding of who he was as he was running for president, you know, I was still undecided. I didn't know, but I was learning quite a bit about him. And I found something about his demeanor, not only very convincing, but incredibly graceful. And even if he were not to win, there was something in his words that made me think about the state of the country and how we really do need to focus and cooperate and take accountability for who we are, you know, as citizens. And that's what inspired me to write that song. So to think of it not just on a personal level, in our interpersonal relationships, but to think outside of that circle, outside of that sphere, and look at, you know, how we are with each other in our day-to-day lives. And
that's,
so
yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Every now and then, you know, I close with that song or that maybe second to the last song. And that really brings people to a thoughtful place. And I often get people clapping and singing along to that, as they would a song like White Jumpsuit, which is you know, highly autobiographical White Jumpsuit, because that song is in fact about a, you know, sort of a pastiche, if you will, or little melange of my childhood taking road trips with my family from suburbs here in Staten Island up to the Bronx and passing through all the boroughs. And while all this is happening, I'm sitting in the back of my parents' Bel Air station wagon listening to song after song on the FM station, the AM station. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mind you, this is the 70s, so there was a lot of great and interesting songs, you know, one right after the other, that would come on.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. And it would take me to this wonderful place, and at the same time, I would get find myself getting a little, you know, woozy from the car ride. And sometimes my mom would have to pop me a Dramamine, or, you know, if I wasn't, you know, feeling woozy, I was feeling, you know, very, you know, imaginative, looking out the window and thinking about what it would be like to live in, because a lot of these songs that were evocative of that time were evocative of this West Coast lifestyle. And here I was, this East Coast kid, fantasizing about what it would be like to, what it would be like to live over there and be, say, 10 years older than I was, so that I could have a real sort of, you know, adult experience, you know, hanging out at the beach, you know, doing things that grown-ups do. And so that's what, you know, White Jumpsuit is about. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side, and fantasizing about what it would be like being somewhere else. If it was really that way, you know,
it's driving down
the Boulevard, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, imaginative, most definitely. I could just sit and listen to you talk about life and people, places, and things, because I'm the same way. I'm very much I embellish life, you know, because it's very beautiful in spite of all the things that are going on. Now, if I'm not mistaken, you were also involved in a tribute to the artist known as Prince. Well, am I wrong about that, or
you were right,
I remember?
About that.
I've been keeping up with you, Mary.
I'm so glad you have, because that makes one of us. You know, it's really been a very creatively expansive year for me, because, you know, in addition to all these, you know, wonderful opportunities, you know, creating large-scale soundscapes and been working on, you know, just kind of coming off of doing a full album, I also was invited to do some backing vocals for a Prince tribute, which took place about a month ago, just about a month ago, right before my birthday. And it was a really fun night. It was produced by Crystal Durant and Paul Bertolino, two wonderful artists who I work with from time to time, New York-based artists. And it was a great show. I mean, the band was, you know, I was floored by the talent that I was surrounded with. I mean, really, I was just a cog in the wheel, GD, so I don't, you know, I can't toot the horn too loudly, but I did do a solo. I did do a Wendy and Lisa song with Crystal Durant. I won't say a solo, a duet, actually, with Crystal Durant. We did one of my favorite Wendy and Lisa songs called Waterfall.
I knew you were going to say that. I love that song.
It's a great song. When that album came out, now, let's see, would you say that was about 25 years ago because of the...
Oh, my God, you're dating us, Barry.
I know. Well, you know, somebody's got to, right?
Yeah.
You know, sadly, you know, sort of, you know, counterbalance with the sadness of the earthquake 24 years ago. It was 25 years ago that the Wendy and Lisa album was released, right, 1988. Or late 87, I believe it was 88, and when that album came out, that was, you know, one more thing in my arsenal to lip sync to, or to try to air guitar to, and I thought, well, you know, these are two very powerful women who I've always admired in the, you know, in Prince's band. I was just very happy for them that they had gone out on their own and really shown and created this wonderful work. And Waterfall was just such a, you know, uplifting song for me at that time, as well as their, you know, I was just really moved by a number of the ballads they did, even some of the instrumentals that are on that album. But it was great. You know, here I was 25 years later, sort of living out this dream, like, wow, I'm on stage. You know, even though I've been on stage many times on my own, there's something that just brings out the, you know, the teenager in you when you do something that's just a little different from your usual lineup of songs. So that was a lot of fun.
Definitely.
And
well,
I also just wanted to briefly mention that another friend of mine, Randy Schmidt, who is the author of what I like to consider the definitive Karen Carpenter biography, Little Girl Blue, was out on, he does pretty much a continual press junket from time to time. Came back to New York for the first time in a couple of years. Now, a few years ago when he was initially launching the book, Janice Siegel from the Manhattan Transfer was his musical guest, who sang a few Carpenter songs in between his reading of the book. And this year, I had the great honor of being invited to be the musical guest on this press junket. And sang a few Carpenter songs. It was really that was also a really great experience. And these are things that, again, you know, these opportunities that come up that think, oh, you know, this is something that I dreamt about when I was 10 or 15, and, you know, here I am years later having that experience. And again, it may seem like not a big deal, but it is humbling to be asked, to be invited.
You know what it is. You know what it is. I really love the Carpenters, and Karen always had, she sang with that tear in her voice, and you have a quality in your voice that I'm just so drawn to, because it was during a very hard time that when I received the autographed copies of the Console CD and then the A Smile in the Mind CD, and I played it a lot, and it really did carry me, like you mentioned earlier throughout this interview, how it takes you to another place, and sometimes being in another place mentally helps ease whatever it is that you're going through. So now, as I look at this, I want to get a smooth landing as we wind down on this 30 minutes, and I want to know what's next on the horizon for Mary Edwards.
Well, I've got two more studio albums. One is an EP, and the other one is going to be a full length. And the EP, I am looking to release by the end of this year, sometime before December 31st, which I've been threatening to release for quite some time. sort of been reworking, and it's called Every Day Until Tomorrow. And it pretty much consists of mainly instrumentals, wordless vocals, songs that sort of carry over from my last project, which was Eastern Central Mountain and Pacific, which was released a year ago, fall of 2012. And again, they are songs that are, you know, evocative of place, songs that are pretty much about suspenseful and suspending experience of, you know, being in between two places. There's a lot of music there that's evocative of flight, of flying, of reminiscent of the time when one could take a plane trip and it was romantic.
Oh wow!
Before we moved into this time of things of the, you know, this great hustle bustles, you know, feeling like we're in an Airbus. So there's that element to the record. Again, it's very nostalgic. And yet there's one foot in the present, too. So it does speak to the present as well as the past. And then my full-length album that I will be working on for 2014, hopefully to be released fall of 2014, is called Natural Anthem. And that's going to be another return to my singer-songwriter roots. So look for another mix of, say, Joni Mitchell meets Donald Byrd meets Stevie Wonder meets Fireball.
Now on that, So what I'm saying is that it's just wonderful to have you on the show again. And
it's great to be back. I really appreciate that.
Well, yeah, you don't be a stranger, all right?
I will not, and you too. And thank you again. It's just nice to return to the land of GD and talk to you again.
Well, all right, love. Well, you take care of yourself. And, of course, the next time I interview, I'm definitely going to have an hour because, you know, I'm finding out it's a 30-minute show. There was a time when I said, okay, well, 30-minute show is not going to be long enough. Then there was a time when I thought it was going to be too long. But then there never seems to be enough time, especially when you have an artist that really is about the art because you speak it fluently. And so it's just been an honor. Once again,
it's been my pleasure. It's been my pleasure.
All right,
thank you.
All right, so I'm going to go back and listen to the recorded broadcast. Other people can listen to the recorded broadcast as well. And I definitely want us to keep in touch. And if I see things, I'm just promoting you just because I believe in what you're doing. You know, I just love it.
Thank you so much, GD, and you yourself being such a wonderful artist and prolific writer. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Nice to be part of your circle. Thanks for having me in.
Oh, well, ditto, and definitely the feeling is mutual. So you go ahead on and enjoy your evening, get some rest, and
I will.
Beauty
sleep.
All right,
darling.
Dallas.
Take care.
Bye-bye.